Erase it, it has to be erased afterwards. Okay.
What?
Well, erase it, it has to be erased. Yeah. Good, so I received some of the issues that you want to discuss. And as we go along, if things are not as clear as they should be, so you'll raise questions as we go along. So I won't go in order. The issues of driving in Shabbos, the overview of driving and commuting in Shabbos and on Yom Tov. So the overview is that when one is contemplating having to go in on Shabbos, so it means that it's Friday, and you know that you'll either be taking call from home on Shabbos, or you'll be have to come in for a shift on Shabbos. Those are the two separate scenarios. So the scenario where you're at the stage of being able to take call from home, so then there's no reason not to go, because there are chances, hopefully good chances, that you'll be able to manage it from home. Manage from home, you can manage over the phone. It's all the rabbonans. So why shouldn't you go home for Shabbos? And there is a suffix that maybe you'll have to come back in to deal with a cholish ish basakana, but that'll be mutter to come in. And you'll come in, hopefully, with a non-Jewish driver with a cab. But the question that is discussed by the poskim is if you know that you for sure have to come in the next day. In other words, you're on call Shabbos morning. You have to make rounds Shabbos morning. So Friday, you finished your work, but you know you're going to have to come in the next day. So that was a machlokes between Rav Moshe and many other poskim. In this case, Rav Moshe was the Das Yochid. Rav Moshe's position was that you can't go home, because you know you for sure have to come in the next day. And since coming in the next day for cholim mesukonim, for those who are in danger, we paskin that Shabbos is dechuya. What I mean by Shabbos dechuya means that there's a machlekes, and as you all know, in the Rishonim, and a machlekes seemingly in the Mechaber Ramah, where the Mechaber seems to take the view that if somebody is in need of Melechus Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, so one doesn't have to cut any corners, one doesn't have to ask a kohen to take care of it. So that is what we call Hutra. And the Ramah says that if it will not compromise the care of the patient, so then we should ask a kohen to take care of it. So that is a more nuanced issue, but it is the flashpoint for the question of whether, when we say that we're going to do Melechus and Shabbos in order to save somebody's life, is Shabbos being disbanded? It's like Tuesday, or is Shabbos being pushed aside? The difference being, if you can keep Shabbos and if you can save the person's life and not do the malacha, so you should try to do that. So Rav Moshe takes that position to the extreme, and he says that tomorrow morning you're going to be allowed to get into a car and drive to the hospital, because you're going for Pikuach Nefesh. So there's no reason to drive your own car. You can get there in a timely fashion by taking an Uber, taking a non-Jewish cab. So you take a non-Jewish cab, good, that's how we would paskin. But then Rav Moshe says, but since Dechuya means Efshel Kaim Shneim, so how can I leave the hospital? How can I leave the hospital on Friday? If I find a room to stay over Friday night, so then I don't have to even take the leniency of having a goy drive me in. So right now I know I'm coming in for sure tomorrow morning. That's the deal. I got to come in. That's my obligation. And right now I can work it out to stay in the hospital and make my Shabbos. So that's Rav Moshe's sort of extreme view of the dechuya. And most of the other posts that are familiar with it do not accept that extreme view. Shlomo Zalman disagreed with it. The Minchas Yitzchak, Mr. Weiss agreed with it, Rabbi Yosef, I believe, the Eliezer. In fact, we know this because in Eretz Yisrael, I believe things have not changed. When I checked into this many, many years ago, probably when I was here, so the practice for Shari Tzedek was that a non-Jewish driver would go around picking up the doctors. So the Shari Tzedek doctors did not stay Friday afternoon. They knew they had to come in Friday Shabbos morning. They went home. But they had, they were allowed to come back in the Mir Lenochri with the drive in the morning. So, and that was signed off by these gedolim that I mentioned. What's the Hezber Adover? So there are two ways of examining it. One way is to say it's the language of Shlomo Zalman, the language of Reb Nerith in the safe in the Shavir Shabbos is that Friday afternoon you're not mechuyev to worry about Shabbos morning. But you're not mechuyev to say I'm going to stay here because what's going to happen 12 hours later. That's a very difficult svara, but it's a svara of Gedolim, so it's a powerful svara. Reb Nerith later on wrote several rice against that svara. But I don't think that's what Shlomo Zalman was saying. I think there are two ways that one can genuinely defend this position. Probably what Shlomo Zalman was saying, he just didn't, because we know from his other writing, Shlomo Zalman holds that there is a cap on how far you take duchuya. How much must I matriach myself even duchuya? Right? In other words, I have efshalakayim shneya. So what does efshalakayim shneya mean? How far do I have to go in order not to have to drive in Shabbos? So you have to call a non-Jewish doctor, wake him up, pay him a huge sum of money, so I shouldn't have to do Mechal Shabbos. I shouldn't have to do Melachah. How far does it go? So there has to be some limitation in the Chuyah. Efsh L'Kaim Shneim is open-ended. So Shlomo Zalman said that Efsh L'Kaim Shneim is limited. He had a very severe limitation. Shlomo Zalman. He said that having to wake somebody else up, that's already beyond the requirements of Eshel Kaim Shneim. He said that this is a classic example. A wire falls down, and it's a live wire. And there are two ways to fix, and it's on Shabbos, and it's a Jewish neighborhood, or not Jewish neighborhood, and it's dangerous to walk by the live wire. So two ways to fix a live wire. One is yeshivish. You take a chair and you sit by the live wire and you start, don't go near, right? And one is Helm Depot. You call up the company to come and fix it. So Shlomo Zalman says, not mechuyev to take a chair and spend your whole Shabbos waving people away. You're allowed to make a call and have people fix it. So Shlomo Zalman says, even though dechuya, I have to try to keep Shabbos. But there's an extent, how far you go. So he held a sitting in a chair for all of Shabbos was beyond the requirements of Dechuya. He was taken to task by one of the Gedolei Yerushalayim, Reb Pinchas Epstein, was the head of the Eidei Charedus at that time. So Eidei Charedus, he thought that Reb Moshe was terribly wrong, Reb Shlomo Zalman was wrong in this. He thought he went too far in limiting Dechuya. It was published in a very funny place. Before you were born, there used to be a very, very fat pocket sitter. It was like a stira. It couldn't fit in any pocket. It was like this thick. It was a fan, my Bim called it the Desert Isle Sitter. If you had to be stuck in a desert isle, this is the one you wanted. So it had all of davening, obviously, and then it had how to make Erevin, anything you might want to know if you're stuck in a desert isle on Shabbos. So one of the things happened that has in there is that Pikuach Nefet is Rufu and Shabbos Halachas. So Pinchas Epstein was the consult, so to speak. So that's where he chose to make his point against Shlomo Zalman. They thought Shlomo Zalman was wrong, and then Shlomo Zalman wrote back in the, I don't know if it's still around, the Moriah Journal. Maybe defunct by now, but then he republished it in the Mincha Shlomo. So that's probably what I think Shlomo Zalman is saying. He's saying there's an extent for dechuya. We pass in dechuya, but how far does it go? So he thinks that dechuya does not go to the extent. It makes sense if dechuya doesn't mean that I can't wake up somebody. I don't have to wake somebody up. It certainly doesn't mean that I have to sleep in an on-call room in hospital and not be with my family. So that probably is what Shlomo Zalman was saying. And then there's another approach, and that is that, which is not so clear in the, not so clear as to exactly how Rav Moshe would address this, and that is that in this, that we're talking about a case of coming back with an Eino Yehudi. We're coming back with doing a Melacha Derabban on Shabbos morning. It's a little bit different. Now, what's the din of, do I have to stay in the hospital on Shabbos to avoid being coming back with an Eino Yehudi Shabbos morning? So Shlomo Kluger writes that Amira L'Nochri V'Pikuach Nefesh, that's a Hutra. That's not a Dechuya. Amira L'Nochri V'Mokim Mitzali goes by Rabbanon, that's a Hutra. There's no such thing as an Isid Rabbanon when there's Pikuach Nefesh. So there are two ways of very strongly defending Shlomo Zalman's view. And there's a third way which was under question. So that's why L'Ani Yisdaiti, we would allow a person to come home on a Friday afternoon, even though they know for sure going in Shabbos morning, but then they should go in with a non-Jewish driver Shabbos morning. That can be arranged well in advance. As I was driving, I was thinking, it's a little bit of an interesting horror, maybe an interesting article, that the Amud Hayra, that Paskin, that it's not a problem to do a non-Shomer Shabbos residency. Now, the Amud Hayra that said that the better training trumps the concern of Shabbos Tuchuyis, Rav Moshe. So it's funny that we're being Semech and Rav Moshe, I mean, we're following Rav Moshe, the Ikaron, but then on this important prat, we wouldn't follow Rav Moshe. But as I said, it's not clear to me, but it's not a stira. I don't think it's a stira. It's two different issues. And again, it's not clear to me that Rav Moshe zeroed in on this nakuda that you're coming in with a Yehudi in the morning. So that would be how one gets home. Now the question is, how about when one is when one's finished one's work in the hospital? How does one get home then? So that is a much more discussion is, I say, more nuanced. It's a more textured sugya. Why is that? Because once you've finished your work in the hospital, so you're not going home for pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is done. So why should there even be a possibility of allowing any leniency at all in going home? So that is because there are several sugyas in Erevin that say that hitiru sofon otu kilosan, that Chazal understood that pikuach nefesh was better served if the practitioner knew that they could get home as well on Shabbos. So the sugya is that a midwife who goes out to take care to deliver a baby, so the Gemara gives her a kulos in getting back. A kulos once she's finished delivering the baby. So that way she'll deliver the baby. She'll say, why should I get to go, I have to go, pikuach nefesh. Now, it's an hour before Shabbos is over, 2 hours before Shabbos is over, and contractions are in the beginning, and the water broke. Maybe, you know what, maybe I should be, let's say it's a Shabbos morning. She's thinking, well, contractions are very, very slow, first baby. So maybe I'll make it till the end of Shabbos, so I won't run. Because she's thinking, what's going to happen if she gets there, and she's going to have to spend all Shabbos afternoon there. So Chazal said, because of these cheshbonos, it wouldn't exactly work in this particular case, didn't have these details, but in order to make sure that people will go out and do pikuach nefesh, he tiru sofon otuchti losen, so the fear of having to spend a long Shabbos summer afternoon and sitting around and having nothing to do in the hospital, that should not play in our minds in the cheshbon of going in. So it's hitiru sofon otuchti. Chazal have a few cases where they had this cheshbon, that they allowed a heter at a strange time. The issue that is driving the heter is done already. But I have to worry about the decision that was made when one went in, or after the Lashon Chazal is, that I have to worry about the next time the person is going to be called in on Shabbos. So in order to make an accurate, pure, professional decision, we try to clear away the cloud of being stuck in the hospital. Okay. So that, now the question is, when Chazal made this kula, this din, this takonas Chazal, so it's a huge leap, right? When there's a chola, and you know there's a chola, and so the piyuch nefesh is there, no question. Now, then Chazal took a step further and said, a huge chiddush, there is no chola. There might be a chola a Shabbos or two from now. Maybe the doctor will make a lousy decision, which he shouldn't make. So in order to protect him from making a bad decision, we're going to allow a person to drive home with no chola. That's a huge leap in being matir deraisa. Right? So exactly when that leap was made is a huge discussion amongst the achronim. The Gemara has very specific examples. The Gemara says they relaxed certain halachas of tchum. Because normally if you go to the tchum, you're stuck dalet amos. So the Gemara is very, very clear that if you're that they relax the halach of tchum, you don't have to stay within Dalai Lama, so you can go to the closest place. You can violate the Isa Derban of Tchumen. The issue comes to full force in whenever Tzvi Pesach Tshuv is, when Tzvi Pesach Frank's Tshuv. Tzvi Pesach was the very much beloved Rabbi Rush of Yerushalayim for many, many years. He was so beloved in Yerushalayim that after he was Nifter, Yerushalayim could not hire another Rav. I think over a decade before they hired of Jolti Zatzal. And he was just a huge Talmud Chacham that was consulted from all over, and a tremendous neshama, Talmud of Rav Kook. And he, on Pesach night, he would not begin a Seder till right before Chatzais. Why? Because halacha is that once a Rav has had a revius of wine, he can't paskin. So in Yerushalayim in those days, people knocked on his door to paskin shilas. They paskin shilas of the chikmas kosher treif. If they ever fell asleep during the Seder, can they continue the Seder? So he figured, after Kiddush, I can't paskin. So he would hold off till it was the very last moment, and then he would begin his Seder. So he was very, very loved. So he has a tshuva where somebody was, there was a doctor who drove home from taking care of a chayla, and then he asked him, Tzvi Pesach, am I allowed to turn off the car? Because if you leave the car going, then it'll eat all the fuel, and I may have another call. So Tzvi Pesach says, after he answers the questions, but how did you get home? Who allowed you to drive home? Right? So he says, he's probably thinking that this Gemara applies. This Gemara doesn't apply. This Gemara was talking about Chum. Chazal never, it's not this huge leap that every single Rabbanon is going to be waived. Chazal took a little step. Hilchus Chumen. So then Rishvi Pesach says, you look at the Gemara, that's Pshat in the Gemara. He says, however, there is a Tshuva on record from the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer had a question of a Jewish circuit doctor, and the Chassam Sofer permitted him to come home. Chassam Sofer held, we do take this leap for the Rabbonans. He allowed him to ride a horse home. So the Chassam Sofer's understanding of the sugya was that Chazal were making all the Rabbonans, not just on Tchum. So Tzvi Pesach says, the way I learned the Gemara, there's no hetter to come home. That's a huge leap. He says, but kvar hoyre zokin. The Chassam Sofer, in our learning, is an icon. Once the Chassam Sofer says something, it's very hard. We don't budge a Chassam Sofer. So the Chassam Sofer, he said, Chassam Sofer is mutter? Okay. Defer to the Chassam Sofer, only for the Rabbanans. So we base our approach on the Chassam Sofer. That we allow ourselves to do the Rabbanans even after the Pikuach Nefesh is done, in order that next time the Pikuach Nefesh comes up, I won't have in mind this ghost of being stuck in the hospital, and I won't make a non-professional decision. And I know I do my malach and I work, take care of the chola, see them, do what has to be done, and then I can come home with Shabbos. So Kfar HaRizokin, so we also make a Chassam Sofer. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, he took the logic all the way to the extreme, right? He's an extremist. The Chuy also the extreme, and here also. He says, no, a Svara is a Svara is a Svara. In other words, he says, if Chazal were concerned that I would make a bad decision and therefore somebody would die, somebody would not get good medical care, so that Svara is a powerful Svara. So why do you stop at the Rabbanans? Right? And once, that's the Sharpar, no, once Chazal were saying that I'm worried that you're going to make a bad decision, someone's going to die, you're not going to treat the person well. So then, mechitesi, you stop by the Rabbanans. He says, Svar is a very powerful Svar. Shlomo Zalman was so concerned that people would listen to Rav Moshe on this issue, because he thought Rav Moshe was out of the ballpark. He thought that was a wild, wild, he went from Tzvi Pesach. Shlomo Zalman was, I don't think it was a Talmud of Tzvi Pesach, but he had a kira to Tzvi Pesach. So Tzvi Pesach held, nothing was mutter. And Rav Moshe, he matted the rices. After the person was already taken care of, so Shlomo Zalman wrote a famous tshuva, and where he takes Rav Moshe to task in a very, very strong and sometimes very almost fierce arguments. It's one of the, I think it's the only place that I see in Rav Shlomo Zalman Sefer he asked permission from Rav Moshe before he published the tshuva, because it's such a sharp tshuva. And of course, Rav Moshe, Laman Emes, he welcomed that kind of criticism. So Alocha Lamasa, Rav Moshe is a very hard position to follow, and is not widely accepted in this view. Every so often you see a doctor who takes liberties and does drive home on his own. So, you know, again, you have Ashley Ravi to be Semech and Rav Moshe. So you have, it's certainly much more than a Libus Chus. But as a practice, so it's very hard to follow Rav Moshe's view of being Matan Day, right? And there's very, very rarely a reason that would have to be Soymech, especially now with the Ubers and with the availability of cabs. So that would be the Mahalach. Now, there's one more iteration, two more iterations. One iteration is where I am not called in on Shabbos. There's no judgment call going in on Shabbos. There's no judgment call because I'm on call. Right, if I don't go in on Shabbos, I'm going to get, I'll lose my position in the program. So if I'm going in on Shabbos, and I'm not making a judgment call to go in on Shabbos, so then the whole binyan falls apart, then I have to go home. Right, because I'm not in a position where I may make a bad decision. I'm going to get in on Shabbos. So that, I did see, and I have to look into this, that a new sefer came out from Eretz Yisrael recently where someone wants to be mekel even in that situation. So I have to, the footnotes are not so strong in that. I try to figure this out. But I still have to figure this out. Why would anybody, maybe I'm misreading it, maybe it's a mistake in the print. I have to do my research to figure this out. So, in any event, once you have the ability, so that would be a situation where one would be in the hospital even after one's shift is over. Recently I had a shaila, also a wrinkle of this, where a person is on call from home, but the deal is that when they call him, he has to go in. No judgment call. In other words, the interventional cardiologist. So he doesn't get, when the deal with the hospital is, they call, he doesn't get to say, well, maybe you'll do it to TPT instead of doing the, give him a few hours, let's see if he really needs to have a cath put in. He doesn't have that. He doesn't have to say maybe you're misdiagnosing. Maybe there's no maybe. The rule is they call. No decision making. So in that case, my thinking is that he would not be able to come back with a non-Jewish driver on Shabbos because he's not making a decision. The other iteration is Friday afternoon. What happens if you get stuck in Friday afternoon? So here, I think the same rules, that if your shift ends before Shabbos, but you're doing the right thing, you have a patient that you want to see through, so you could legally hand over to the incoming group. But you know this patient, you've been working on him since 10 o'clock in the morning. So now you're going to hand over to somebody else. You want to do the right thing. You watch this person, either get better or get worse, whatever it is, you watch the fluctuations. You know this person better, you know the case better. So then it's the right thing to say. And then you can come back with a cab after Shabbos. Why? Because you're making a judgment, you're not obligated to stay. You could hand off. That'd be acceptable hospital protocol, but you're making a decision. So that can play itself out in several ways. It could happen at 10 o'clock in the morning also. Now at 10 o'clock in the morning, you may make a decision which you know is going to keep you, you're going to order a test. Make more, let's say 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Do you have to order the test? Not order the test. If you don't order the test, you're out by 4 o'clock. You do order the test, you're going to want to stay to get the results. So you make a decision at 2 o'clock, which is going to keep you there after Shabbos. I think that's right. In other words, that's a cheshbon. I'm ordering a test right now, and I know that this is going to keep me in after Shabbos, but since I had that judgment call to make, I'm willing to come back after Shabbos, and he'll get better care. Rav Shechter does not accept this last nakuda. Rav Shechter holds that itirus of otetchiloson only works when you've gotten the first heter on Shabbos has come in. He holds it's within Shabbos. Once I've taken liberties on Shabbos, So then I can come back after Shabbos. But a decision Erev Shabbos doesn't, and that's based on Rabbi Akiva Eiger. But again, I don't, from what I see, there is a lot of poskim do move this halacha into the Erev Shabbos and Shabbos situations. Alice, question?
No.
Good? Okay. Good.
And the same reply, if you're on call Friday, and you know you're going to be there until Shabbos, that's your shift.
If the shift goes, it starts at 7 to 7. Shabbos coming in at 4 o'clock. So your obligation is to be until 7. So I don't think they have to come home then. Question in that case, can you take public transportation home? So if you figure out how to get onto the bus, I have to figure that out. I don't know how to get into the subway without being over an Easter. So then you probably, in other words, nowadays what works with the cards, with phones, you probably, maybe there is some way of...
Was that? Get a colleague swipe for you, a
non-Jewish
colleague.
Yeah, yeah,
seven,
yeah.
For you,
and
you both ride
the subway. Yeah, yeah. That's the kid that we're working on. It's a mirror lock and the rabbanon is a shvus to mitzvah. And as you want to get home for Shabbos, that's a mitzvah. So to ask a goy to do, ask a non-Jew, a goy to do a malach of the rabbanon is a shvus to mitzvah. So what's the problem? The problem is zilusa de shabsa, taking a train on Shabbos, taking a bus on Shabbos. So we generally assume that Zilus of the Shabbos is mutter for pikoch nefesh. So this is also, I think it's close enough to pikoch nefesh that we could take the heter of Zilus of the Shabbos. And there is a preference. The Chazanish had a preference to wear big day rofim, right? To wear the stethoscope, to wear the white coat, to wear something that shows that you're a doctor. So then it's very clear. To my mind, that it's not a zilus of the Shabbos. You're on a different category. So I would advocate very strongly to wear something that shows, as long as it's safe to do that, as long as you won't get mugged because of it. Because to do something that shows that you're a doctor, I think that's that takes care of that problem. Mayor?
How do one make that judgment call in terms of, like, we do hand off all the time? That's like a very,
If everybody's always better than handing off, so then that's a reason to stay.
But we don't, I'm saying, like, how does one make the decision on a Friday afternoon? Like, does a patient have to be, do you have a patient who's, like, gravely ill?
What would happen if it was a Tuesday and you're handing off to the Tuesday night group? The same way you make a decision on Tuesday, make it on Friday. If it's if this person is one of these gentlemen that comes into the ER twice a week, right? So then you can hand them off. Yeah, Tuesday, hand them off. He wants a good night's sleep, so hand them off on Friday also. If it's a person who you can do a good job, right? So you have to just ask yourself, I'm staying because that's better medicine. Right? If I'm staying because, I don't know, for whatever reason, and, let's say a student, and staying because he wants to get a good reference, that would not be good. Right? But if he's staying because that is good medicine, forget it. I think it's very important that way. The decision should be a medical decision, but the impression that we make, that you make on your colleagues, that Shabbos is of supreme importance. Practicing medicine with great care is even greater importance. Right? So I think communicating that is huge, and I think that will buy you lots of favor down the road, and it'll give COVID to everybody who's from. And it'll just make life, and people, I know you do it, but it goes a long way in building Nemonis in the, and that's true for a person who's doing a Shomer Shabbos residence as well, because that's important to create the correct culture. That's the correct halacha culture, right? So that will go a long way in helping us.
Are you able to drive back on Yom Hashanah? You went to the hospital on second
day. Yeah, so I would not say that. In other words, halachically, you have a very good point. In other words, halachically, you're saying that that a yom tov sheni is a derabbanan, right? So driving is only one derabbanan. That's that. You wouldn't be making driving back. You're saying asking a goy to take you back. That's what I would say. In other words, on yom tov sheni, it's a derabbanan. Okay. Now you want to take the next step and say that havara on yom tov is a derabbanan. So, somebody else starts the car. Even you set the car. It's all derabbanans. So havara on yom tov sheni, should we say that the shus to shus is makim mitzvah? So I wouldn't say that. For obvious reasons, you're going to have such a pirtz of yom tov sheni, it'll be like the incorrect psak in Eretz Yisrael for yom tov sheni. We won't keep it, so that we wouldn't do. No, so I don't think that's a good idea, and I think that that there's no reason to take that liberty, because I think what you can do is ask a goy to bring you home on yom tov sheni. Right, let's say the case where you are, you're not on call. You're doing rounds. You're scheduled shift. Yom Tov Sheni is scheduled shift. You finish your scheduled shift. Yom Tov Sheni morning. So would it be Yom Tov Rishon? Would it be Shabbos? So then you can't come home, as we explained, because there's no judgment call to come in. And Yom Tov Sheni, I would say yeah. That's a shus to shus mokim mitzvah to get home for Shabbos, to get home for the rest of Yom Tov. So I would say, yeah, it's a Yom Tov Sheni is one drabbanon, and a Mir Lanoch is the other drabbanon. The next step, that is out of my league, whether you can say that for Yom Tov Rishon. Can you ask a guy on Yom Tov Rishon to drive you home, because Havara on Yom Tov Rishon is drabbanon, and asking a guy is another drabbanon. So that already is... It's a good question. But that's for the top tier. And I've done like 6th, 7th tier. That's for the top tier poskim to make the decision. That's a Klal Yisrael document. But I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not discouraging you from exploring it. It is a very important thing to explore. Yeah.
But if your shift ends at 7 and you know Shabbat
7 a.m.
p.m.
P.M. 7 p.m.
on Friday, and right. Shabbos is coming in 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
You can get into the cab before Shabbos starts.
So that's yeah.
So
you have a scheduled shift that ends 10 minutes before Shkia.
Right.
All right. So then, and so you want to get home for Shabbos. Right. So then there is another din that is that you have to know, and that is a mira l'nachri l'tzorech Shabbos. Is mutter till tzeis, right? So mir l'nachri l'tzorech Shabbos, mutter till tzeis. So that is thank you very much. So that means that the answer is yes. If you'll get home, if you will be home before tzeis, I would say at least a 15-minute tzeis. Everybody should tzeis. So if you'll get home in the 15 minutes, so I think that's fine. To ask a goy to take you within those 15 minutes. That's a mira. Yeah. Had some interesting situations where somebody, it's a Friday afternoon, right before Shabbos, and the family called up, they were stuck. The entire family was in a, was on the way to the island, they got stuck in the Van Wyck. That's not called getting stuck, that's called being in the Van Wyck. They didn't know. So they're on the Van Wyck. That means that they're stuck in the Van Wyck. So, and they saw that they would not get to their place by Shabbos. So, what are they going to do? So to drop in on one of the local communities, they had a whole family. So I said what they should do is they should figure out with the ways where they're going to be 10 minutes before Shabbos, find a parking lot near there, and order an Uber to that place. Right, and then they'll transfer to the Uber, right, and then they get 15 minutes with the Uber, and then they'll make it. So this family did a very smart thing. They went to the oil. They left their car by the oil, so it was watched over Shabbos, and they took an Uber from the oil, and over Shabbos they came back. So that's something to keep in mind also when you get stuck. But that's straightforward. Good. So we've done the overview. So we did the overview, and we did number 2 as well. So this is an interesting question. One question is, if it's very expensive, a shift on Shabbos day, can one drive a car because of the expense involved in taking it? I don't think so. The question is a good question. The question is that a person, it's Rosh Shlomo Zalman's question, how much do you have to spend in order not to have to make use of Tehuya and Shabbos? So, I think that we would, for money purposes, we should be very, very careful and not risk what could be and he said, Deiraisa, if you make a mistake, and I could take it, could go with a goy and I'm driving myself, so he said, Deiraisa. So for money, I think one should not, even it could be very, very expensive. But also you run into trouble, because if I were to say that there is a amount of money which would allow a person to drive themselves rather than take an Uber, and then I would have to tell you then to stay in the hospital Friday night. Right? Because then you'll be coming back, because then you'll be driving on your own on Shabbos. So then you wouldn't be allowed to leave Friday. Right? Based on what we said at the very beginning. So therefore, it's... I think for money, one shouldn't... that's one of the... There are several nisyonis that your work brings, and that is one of the nisyonis, and it does become... It can become costly in making sure that one is careful in Shabbos.
What if for some reason someone can't take a cab, there are no Ubers within 30 minutes, and then so it happens that you have to drive? What is Rebbe Hold about turning the car off when you're...
So, Lanis Land, in the metropolitan area, it's a sakana to leave a car running.
Because if someone would steal it?
If a kid gets into it, okay. What a sakana. Right? So that I can't... And the truth is, even not in a metropolitan area, it would be hard to imagine an area that you'd feel comfortable, no kid is going to come in here and drive your car away. So it's a kibui, according to many Rishonim, it's a kibui de Rabbanon. A kibui without a pechman, that are called the Rabbanon. It's a machleg, it's Rishonim. But Mishnah Berurah indicates that when push comes in, when you have to make a decision, they all just a kibui de Rabbanon. So then you can try to use a shinui. All right, so then it's certainly, I wouldn't say certainly, then it's most likely a Durbana. So I wouldn't leave it running. It's too much to sakana.
And that's even though you can lock your car from the inside before you close it?
So if you are sure that that's going to work, yeah. But again, the pachad of a kid driving a car, or the pachad of somebody who can get around your lock driving your car, is nerve-wracking. So and again, it's a Durbana. Again, if you're sure, if you feel comfortable that that's going to be okay, then right, then you shouldn't. But I'm not sure if that's... I have to discuss with people whether they think that that's a safe thing to do.
There's go ahead. If we're saying you should spend your money...
A little bit louder?
If we're saying you should actively spend more money in order to defend against a chance of a derisive risk of abundance, so should you... spend your money to trade shifts?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think
that's... Limit, like go over your salary to trade shifts?
No. They're two separate issues. One is, should you spend money in order to trade shifts? Now, how much you have to spend, I think that's different than... That's a different question than driving versus a non-Jewish driver. Right? Because then when you're on call... The chances of doing the Eraisa are very, very slim. All right? I'll get back to it. The chances of doing the Eraisa is, we'll come to that in a moment. You know, because especially if you work a little bit and train yourself to write with your weaker hand, then it's, and certainly if you are on a digitized situation. So you're going to be negotiating almost entirely the Rabbanans. So the question is, how much do you spend in order to have somebody else? Off the top of my head, I can't give you a shear, but you wouldn't have to. I don't think you'd have to spend anything near your income on that. Right? Because again, because you're not going to, you have to be willing to spend every cent you have to avoid an Iser. To avoid an Iser to run also. Here we're talking about avoiding being doche. Right, but here we're talking how much you have to spend not to make use of the heter of the leniency of dechuya. How far is that? As I said before, so Rav Moshe said you have to be willing to stay in the hospital overnight. He didn't give us the upper cap. Rav Shlomo Zalman had a much lower cap. So then, so that's much harder to nail that down. Lani is daiti. Good. All right, so let's move on to the to writing in Shabbos. And then we'll move away from Shabbos a little bit. So the writing in Shabbos, the questions that are posed to you are the difficult questions, which are part of the, which are, for me, the defining nisayon of physicians that will require one to be in the hospital on Shabbos. What I mean is that a person, when a person decides to accept or to go into a match where they're going to end up being in the hospital on Shabbos and take care of Cholim on Shabbos, so one is making a decision that I understand that if ever I come to a situation where it isn't mutter to do something, then I can't do it. Right? In other words, whenever somebody asks me whether they to walk through the decision making process of a going for a Shomer Shabbos residency or a non Shomer Shabbos residency, so the first thing I say that one can only consider a non Shomer Shabbos residency or position if one knows that you'll be Omer B'Nisoya. Right? In other words, if you're in a situation and you're being asked to write something which is not l'tzarech pikuach nefesh, even in a with a in a remote fashion, but there's no way. In other words, a death slip and the hospital is has 20-30 beds that are empty, right? So when there's no raging well, it wouldn't matter. So in that case, you have to be able to say, "I can't do it," right? Even in that case, it would be hard even to justify. It'd be hard to justify. You couldn't do it even with a shina. You have to get a friend in. It could be that someone will be very upset with you. It could be that there'll be a family who's very upset. That there's a head nurse who's very upset. Right? The wrath of a head nurse is quite significant. So it's up there with so you'd have to be able to say, and they're gonna see it through. They've been looking for this opportunity to report me, and Monday morning the head of the department's gonna call me in. You have to be able to say, but there's no heter for this in Shabbos. So that's the first thing. A person say, I can be Ovi Minisoyan. So that Nisoyan that would come up, it'd be very, very rare that these Nisoyans come up, but these are the situations when there is a death slip and there are empty beds. So what would be the tzad to say that I could do this? Right? Even a derabon in that case. I'm not servicing anybody. There is, I saw recently from Eretz Yisrael, Dr. Abraham, one of his new svarim, and I think he quotes Shlomo Zalman, to say that if you're in a situation where moving somebody along will service many other people, right? For example, you're in a hospital where every bed is taken, right? So when somebody gets moved on, somebody comes up from the emergency room. When somebody comes up, somebody gets into the emergency room, right? So now it's very possible that you free up one bed upstairs, you could end up, as a result of just moving things along, you can have much more of a ripple effect than just one person. So that, he says, is really called the Tzarech Rabbim. So I think he quotes from Shlomo Zalman as saying that Amira Lenochri, the Tzarech Rabbim, would apply in this case. So that's a robust heter. What he's saying is the following. There is a sheet which the Ramah quotes that Amira Lenochri is mutter Litzarech, mitzvah Litzarech Rabbim. Right? The classic case of this was that you're in shul and the lights are off, and but yet there are incandescent lights, candles, and no one can read a siddur. So you could ask, so Amir Lenochri, where's the heter for Amir Lenochri? So there is an iter that Amir Lenochri is mutter Litzarech Rabbim, Litzarech Mitzvah. So the Rabbim can daven. So that is a heter from the Eter, which the Ramah quotes, but it's one that the Achronim are very, very hesitant in employing. So we employ it because the Machlaikas of whether the heter was meant for every mitzvah only for Bris Mila. That's the Machlaikas. So the Ramah quotes it. So the Achronim push back on the Ramah. They shouldn't have quoted it because it's the Das Yochin. But the Ramah quotes it. We use it, for example, we would be semech on it for an Erev. Erev falls down, and it requires a malacha deiraisa to fix the Erev. So I would ask a goy to do the malacha deiraisa so that people will not be over the Yisrael Beitzah. All right, that's accepted. It was the Nid of Yehuda, when he came to Prague, so at the end of Yom Kippur, all the lights were out. So the practice was that in the middle of the Ilah, they would invite a goy to come in and start putting out all the candles. So the Nevi Yehuda says, how can you do this? You're going to be Samech on the Eter at the very end of Yom Kippur. He says, if you haven't said Shemayin Esra yet, okay. But because when you hear the Piyutim at the end of Ne'ilah, because the Chazan wants to dray around, he says, you better make an early Yom Kippur and don't be Samech on this Eter. So Shlomo Zalman wrote, or he instructed, that in this case, I can ask a non-Jew to sign the deslip, to prepare the deslip. I can ask the non-Jew to prepare, so that would be, or alternatively, let's say it's a digitized deslip, an electronic signature. So that's the Rabbanon. Okay, so Shlomo Zalman v'Meikel, that's a bigger kula, because we only allow Amir Lenochri. So it's not so clear we allow any Rabbanon. No, it's an Amir Lenochri. If it's an Amir Lenochri, And the Nochri is going to do a digitized death slip, so that could be a double derodon. So then he could have maybe a little more room to move. But that would be that is the nisayon. That's why you have to have good relations and be able to call upon. Now, what about a discharge slip? So a discharge slip is a little bit more room to move, because, you know, correct me if I'm not accurate over here, but a discharge slip is included in a discharge of his instructions, right? So you could say, nope, so you'll call up after Shabbos and give instructions. So we have to give instructions now. But apparently it's widely accepted that you have one shot at giving instructions, right? And even that, you're not sure if they're going to listen to you. But that you're going, and this is a case where hospital protocol is not just bureaucracy, not just insurance, but it's understanding the population. So the chances that you may not get through Mitzvah Shabbos, the chances you will not be able to impress upon the importance of their follow-up. So you have one shot, they're here, with many, many patients. You have one shot to impress upon them, they got to do this, they have the follow-up, that you have to give them like the first Rashi Nachrimos, tell them there was one guy, you know, the first Rashi Nachrimos. He said, tell the patient, the last guy did not follow instructions, didn't make it back. So you have one meeting to tell them they got to follow up, and you're not going to have a second chance. So then, very often, if a guy came to the hospital, very often the correct follow-up is pikuach nefesh, right? So and if you don't give it to him b'chsav, so I know if I don't get instructions b'chsav, it's hard to follow up. So you have to give it to them in writing. All right, so that is het to pikuach nefesh. And then try to do with the shinoi. Again, if it's digitized, it's really the Rabbanan. And if it's not digitized, that's a good place to use your weaker handwriting. There could be situations where you could prepare you may know after a while what are the possible. You're not going to know the full range of discharge, but it could be after a while you'll know. 80% of discharge have the following instructions. So then you may be able to prepare. Maybe it's done already, where you just have to make simanim. Simanim also is also ksiva, but it might be you can digitize with highlights or something. Or you can cross out that which is not relevant. So those are all those things to keep in mind going forward, and to prepare as much as possible going forward.
What if it's definitely not pikuach nefesh for them to follow up? Like I've seen it many times this year where it's not even pikuach nefesh for the patient to be admitted, but they are admitted for some reason. It's definitely not pikuach nefesh for them to follow up. Let's say it's just a cholish ein bo sakana. If that is in mutter to type the discharge summary, which includes not just instructions, but also like the full hospital course so that their doctor knows what happens. There definitely is not pikuach nefesh.
For cholish ein basakana, we are making the rabbanans. So he preferred to use the rabbanan of Amir Lenachri, but the push comes to shove, you can make the rabbanans. You have to be judicious, though. Things that are really not important, that could be. We should not underestimate the importance of identifying people, because we all know things get mixed up. So having real good identification person is, I think. Is very important. Anything which could be important for a future hospital ER visit, that's very important. So you do have to use your judgment. And things that are really not important are things that would just be repetitious. It's just things that are there to prove that you saw what was happening. So then you have to try to be makatzer and say, saw what was happening. Notice this, saw this. So you should, the caveat to that is that in order to do good medicine, you can't have in your mind always having makatzer, right? So you have to weigh one from the other. In other words, if you're going to end up spending your mental energy and figuring out what to say, what not to say, so then you're not going to be doing a great job in Shabbos, you're not taking care of the cholah. So part of your cheshbonos are a very simple mashal. You could take the stairs entire Shabbos, right? Or you can take the elevators at the Rabbanan. So you end up taking the stairs the entire Shabbos, and maybe the first two or three patients, you'll be okay. But after, you're going to be a shmata, so you're not going to be able to do good medicine. So you have to take that into account as well. If your mind is going to be in a different place, so then you're not going to be as focused as it should be, so then you can't have to think about this in advance. But so you don't have to make a lot of decisions on the spot. But being makatzer, trying to minimize the amount of what gets written on these kinds of slips, one should try. Also, after a while, you'll know 90% of what gets written. So either you can prepare before, or there again, these probably they could be, what do they call it when you hit? Is there any, when you hit an arrow and drop down? Right, so that will make life. So the more. Digitized your environments are. You're ready on a drabonon of ksiva. Printing out is different though. Printing out, many postmen, that's already ksiva de raisa. So printing out, you try to get somebody else to hit print. So that's worth paying somebody for just hit the print button. Because that's where you come across a de raisa according to many, many postmen. There are poskim who say, and this is an interesting, I'm sure you thought about this, to hit the print button with a shinui. So that's a highly questionable shinui. In other words, a shinui which is entirely ineffective in making this a more cumbersome thing to do. Right? In other words, you hit the print button with your elbow. It's going to print the exact same way. So is that a shinui because I hit the print button with my elbow? So there are poskim who say, yeah. Because it might take you a few times to hit it. So since it's less efficient, it's already a shinui. So we do employ that shita, but there is always a hesitation with shinui in an electric appliance, because once you hit the button, then it's like a perfect melacha. So there, but again, the poskim do see that as a shinui. So that's what you have to do if it comes to the better testament yellow print, but that you'd have to be samechan if you end up printing. I assume it's the same thing with the patient leaving with an AMA against medical advice. Because that is, again, maybe I'm not fully, that's more to protect the hospital and the doctor than to protect the patient, correct? Yeah. Does the patient get anything out of this by having an AMA sign?
No.
Is there anything on it which...
You don't give it to them.
They don't give it to them?
No, you just tell them what you need to tell them often, and they leave, and
they have to sign.
They sign in, you sign in,
the
hospital.
You and they have to sign in.
Yeah, but not the instructions.
No, yeah.
They don't get instructions. They just tell them.
They get a discharge summary and an AMA.
And then,
slip, it doesn't go down.
Yeah, so that's, you have to try to see if you can work out. Yeah, so
that.
That is the following case. A guy shows up in the ER 5 hours later. The fact that there was an AMA 5 hours later, will that impact on medical care at all?
And, or a signature on your wounds. I mean, you might put in the record that they left AMA, but then there's also a form that they and you have to sign that, like, that you told them that they should have
done
that.
So that's the kind of thing you have to get. Even a Amir Lenochmi is harder than that. But I'll tell you what, the way I would think out the head of a Amir Lenochmi in this case is that you're really doing the hospital a service. In other words, who wants that AMA sign? There are two people. You want it signed because you don't want to get criticized, and the hospital wants it signed. The hospital wants their flank covered. So you're really doing a service for the hospital. It's really like an Amira. I know the hospital wants this printed, wants it done. So I would say, I'll tell a non-Jew, we need to get this, we need to take care of the hospital. This guy is leaving AIDS medical advice. You and I need to help the hospital out of here, make sure they're covered. So, can you help me out? And it's my Sabbath, and it's really not going to help anybody get better. Do me a favor. So that would be the heter of Amira Lenochmi in that case. It's not really your, it's not your Amira. It's not the Yesh Malo Dun Bezeh, because he's doing my shlichus, but you try to say, we're both employees of the hospital. We both want to get cover for the hospital. Wouldn't be good for either one of us if hospital was sued. It'll affect your paycheck as well. You make don't give him a whole drasha, but indicate that it's, we're doing it for a higher authority. Good, let's discuss a little bit about non-Shabbos issues, because I think this is again important things to consider. For example, let's say, can one counsel a Jewish patient regarding contraception? So I think that it's very important that a patient gets good information about contraception. By counseling, you're not telling them mutter oser, you're telling them these are the options. And it's very important that they get sound medical advice. And it's very important that you're up on with a patient who's going to take your advice seriously, like from patient. So it's very important that you have your information is accurate. Right, you make sure the information is accurate, meaning that you know the degree of protection of the various IUDs, that you know the upsides and the downsides. In other words, is there a scarring concern with IUDs? Does having IUDs, people don't talk about this at all. It's believed that these are not problems nowadays. You have to do the research to find out. Are there any downsides to future pregnancies? I generally believe that it's not with an IUD. What's the upside of the vervain and the copper? Get good information. What are the real numbers on the latest spermicides? Right? What are the reliable numbers on the latest spermicides? Will you be able to find a sponge? Right? Now it says no sponge is available anymore. Maybe you can't find a sponge for that could be a... How terrible is using the diaphragm? Are the numbers as bad as they say, or are the numbers for the average American, and maybe for a person who's a little more careful, numbers are even better? So to give the patient real information, a front patient is then going to go to their rub, and they're going to have, so it'd be good. There are very, from my experiences, doctors are not that well informed of the contraceptives. In other words, it's not even the OBGYNs. They don't feel it. It's part of their turf. Two areas, that one and lactation. Those are two areas where doctors feel we don't have to deal with this. And because of that, so a lot of people deal with it who have no concept of what they're doing. And a lot of funny medicine comes with it, lactation for sure. A lot of people who... So the answer is like counseling for contraception for sure. To tell them everything which is available. Should do... I think that the rhythm method should be reinvestigated with ovulation tests. Because the rhythm method is not a reliable approach. But can we make it reliable with ovulation tests and robust margins of time? Right? So these are things that people don't want to think about so much because it's not really medicine. Right? So they can do their own research on it. But if you can get real information, and then it's a great resource and a great service.
What about methods like condoms, which I assume are almost never meant to use?
Yeah, well, you can't not tell them about a condom. Right? they won't. They'll say, "Where's this guy coming from?" That time, he doesn't go to drugstores. He doesn't know. Never used the bathroom in an airport. So you can't say that you don't know what a condom is. So if it's a from patient, then you explain to them this is something that is there. That you say it's something which Rabbanim would only resort to in a very extreme case where everything else is totally exhausted. But there are cases, right? They have a case where it's dangerous to have chibur with a spouse, right? Because let's say a spouse was exposed to something. So, depending on how long the abstinence is required to get over this fear, there are times in Rabbanim are matir condoms from people to be used very judiciously, but in those situations, so the cheshbon is that on the one hand, Rechaim Oizer did find the leniency for condoms in extreme cases. On the other hand, if this couple is going to have to abstain, so they have to be an unusual holy couple, if it's not going to impact on their marriage and may not cause some wandering and things that are inappropriate. So there is a place for condoms in practice.
Often these conversations also include the hysterectomy, tubal ligation,
yes.
At least in the situations where I've seen counseling about contraception, they always include like the permanent options.
Yeah.
So, are you allowed to talk about those options to your patient?
But tubal ligations and hysterectomies.
But to say that these are also options for permanent contraception.
Yeah. I think once you're having the conversation, so you have to have a real conversation. But if it's if it's from people, so then you have to indicate to them that tubal ligation is only going to be, and hysterectomies are only going to be permissible in things that are close to life-threatening situations. And with life-threatening and no other alternatives. And as you know, there are places for that for sure. If it's a non-observant couple who are not going to, so you can still do a service. If then the question, should you have the conversation altogether? So then probably if you can easily get out of the conversation and have somebody else do it, so then probably it's better not to go in that direction. Because you're not going to be able to, as a doctor, you're not advocating. So it's better not to have that conversation. If you can, on the other hand, if you have to have the conversation, because that's the way that the patient treatment has evolved, so then if it's a non-observant couple, I think it's worthwhile saying, being able to put in a note of discouragement of making a decision not to have any more children. know, and that can be presented in a way that it's a, it is a very weighty emotional decision, that it does require a lot of hormonal therapy, and you can, it is worthwhile to be very open and discuss some of the concerns that, that the literature has on long-term hormonal therapy, which is also often not discussed with patients. So again, so I would think the following. I would think, I had not thought it before, so we should think about it some more, but I think that it, that if the conversation is going to end up being one about tubal ligation hysterectomy, so it is better to avoid that conversation across the board, because serious fainim yehudim are also concerned about. On the other end, if you have to have the conversation, if it's fallen into your lap, so then I think that the way to go is to be open and honest, but to describe the, you know, that there are concerns about tubal ligation hysterectomies, and that there are things that are often not discussed. And I think it's part of being honest, having an honest presentation. I think not being fully open about some of these, the emotional side of these things, is often an advocacy which is beyond one's turf.
And then if they say, I want to go through with it anyway, are you allowed to refer them to someone else?
What's the option? That's a lift and a lift day. You're not telling him to do anything. You're giving him a maramokum, which doctor, you're telling him that they shouldn't. A person makes a decision that it's connected in, but you want to make sure that they don't go to some doctor who's not going to do a good job. So then it's a lift and a lift day. In other words, a lift day iver is when you, lift day iver day raisa is when you do something that if you wouldn't tell them, they wouldn't end up in these. If you don't tell them about tubal ligation, no one's going to tell them. So that would be a lift day iver. If that's not going to happen, here it's a lifne even a drabonin. Somebody else is going to tell them. Someone's going to do it. They're going to get the education. So it's a misayaya. So there's a Nei Yehuda which says a misayaya for a mumer is mutter. So we semach in the Nei Yehuda routinely. The discussion amongst the poskim. Some say yes, some say no. Rosh Weiss, I think, recently wrote about it. I forget which side he took. I think he is okay with taking it with the Nei Yehuda. But this is not even, this is a lift and a lift day. This is that once you get finished your conversation, you're not going to advocate. If you advocate, so then that's the Rav Moshe, that can be a mesis. That's worse than lift and a lift day. You're advocating. And if it's not a bikoch nefesh case. If you try to advocate by not giving the full picture, not right. But if you're presenting, so a lift and a lift means once you're done, all options are on the table. Nope. So that's not lift either. That's not even lift either. So then that's what you have to do.
I think there would be a case that if you wouldn't mention these options to the patient, it's likely, as you said, like no one would mention it to them. And they just wouldn't be educated about these options. Can you sacrifice, let's say, your integrity as a physician to present all the options to the patient and just not say it at all, and not have anyone else educate them on these issues, if in fact you think it's not medically indicated? So just like avoid it at the sacrifice of like kind of being fully transparent and educating the patient appropriately on all the options. Hey, routinely that's what you should do when it's not indicated for any.
So and that the so again, you have a patient who is that you somehow know that they're not going to, they never heard about a condom and they will never find out about it unless you tell them, right? So the, can you, so then should you
not the case that I was talking about, like
tubal ligation. They never heard of tubal ligation. They never heard of tying the tubes and they're never going to find out about it. So I think that in that case, and it's not medically indicated.
Right. It's just a conflict between like being, you know, having your integrity as a physician to like, teach your patient on all the options that they
right.
have. And the conflict is between that and just like, you know, not trying to even touch a shayla of.
So you have a 32-year-old patient, 32-year-old mother, She has one child, and she has every reason she has more children. So then, should you drop the idea that there is such a thing called tubal ligation? Right, right after she had her first baby, she's in a lot of pain. She's screaming, "Never again!" This is she's telling her husband they're adopting from now on. So, should you? So in that case, in my humble opinion, I would think that you should not. And there's no medical indication b'chlal. So then, I would argue this that it is not. It would not be medical integrity to present to a ligation in that case. Right? Now you say, but hospital protocol is the whole spiel. So I would advocate not to, because once it comes from you, it comes from a doctor, it picks up more significance. So in order to protect yourself, you say there are numerous options. I'm going to discuss with you the options that make most sense for a 32-year-old woman who's, and I'm not going to go through all the options. Right? Especially in your weakened state right now. That's why I would protect yourself. Now, again, getting late, even though I have a parking spot that's good till 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, so in New York that means you just keep on going at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. But you guys are in the parking spot, so instead of letting you go. DNRs and DNIs. So I think that's an important conversation that you have to have. You know better than I that every hospital has their own culture, and in many hospitals there is, you know, a guy who's over the age of pick your age, 81, 99, whatever it is, a guy who's, you know, doesn't know who the president of the United States is right now. So right away, so he has signs of dementia. So you know that in certain hospitals, the moment they see, whoa, this guy may not have a great quality of life, or this guy is really, really old, but he's fully functioning, Baruch Hashem, he's all his koiches. So there's a culture in the hospital that says, no, I don't know, he's lived long enough. I don't know exactly what the cheshbon is, but every time I come across this, a guy comes in, he's fine, he's good, but he's old, all right? So, and then, you know, also there are cultures where if a guy is very, very ill, and all the evidence is that he's not going to pull out, but there is a chance, there's a significant chance it'll have a medical nace. So then, you know, there's a culture that says, get the DNR, get the DNI, prepare the family, and why are we wasting our time? So that is a culture that is, I defend the culture because the ghost in the room is a long-term vegetative state. And all of us who've seen that know that it's a terrible thing. It's undignified. It's doesn't seem to be any purpose to the choyla, and it's very difficult in the family. So that is a ghost, and Rabbanim try to, when it's permissible, try to avoid that happening. But to have that terrible state, which is sometimes halakhically mandated, something's going to happen. And when it happens, the Baruch Hu puts that into place. So there is two vignettes that happened to me. One is that in the 70s, no, in the 80s, so I was... somebody brought me into Rav Shteyman Zatzal, and as we were waiting for him, so a person comes in, and he tells us he was the Baal Gol of the Stipler. He's driving around, and for some reason, he said, and I'll tell you something he told me. I don't know why he told me this. So he said that somebody came to the Stipler, and he already had he was al eris devoy, he had no koiches left, and he couldn't do any mitzvahs anymore. And he wanted it to be over. And the stipler said that the Gemara says that a person who cannot do mitzvahs because he's an onus, he gets the schar of al mitzvah. So this man put on tefillin every day. If he would be healthy, he'd be putting on tefillin. He'd be putting on tzitzis. He'd be learning, he'd be davening. So as he's sitting there, ba'onus, he's getting the schar for, he's racking up mitzvahs, adain sof. So that Neilam Hemes, when the Shema comes, it's going to be a whole different world for him. And then I came across recently in one of Zilberstein's new svarim, I think that's where I saw it, that that there was a person who was a young person who was in a terrible, had a terrible machla, and he was very depressed and didn't seem like he was going to get out of the machla, and he was bedridden, mechulei, in no quality of life. And Rav Zilberstein was not able to bring him back to be in a good position. So he asked Rabbi Tauber from Muncie, I guess he was in Eretz Yisrael all the time, he said, maybe you can help out. So Tauber goes in, long schmooze, comes out, and the guy is in a much better demeanor, he's in a much happier place, and he doesn't live very long, but in his last few weeks, he was in a much better place. So he said to Rav Tauber, so what did you tell him? So he said, I engaged him, I shmooze for a long time, I let him pour his heart out, and then I told him, that Pasuk in Chumash v'chai b'hem. Right, v'chai b'hem means chayecha koyman. It means the Kadosh Baruch Hu says that there's a mitzvah simply to live, right? And v'chai b'hem trumps every mitzvah, right? Except for the avodah zarah, the erev shechus damim. V'chai b'hem trumps every mitzvah. So he says you can't do any mitzvah. You still do v'chai b'hem because that's halacha. V'chai b'hem, if you can, if you have to be willing to live, even though I can't do mitzvahs, I have to do averus. He says, "You kind of mitzvah, pasuk and chumash." So that gave him a chiyus. So when there are these terrible situations, so and we have negotiated halacha as best as we can. So that was the return of Bairi. So even though we're afraid of it, we don't like having it, and it's and people look at us as if we are primitive and Indians. Why are we doing this? We didn't have to get involved in this intubation situation. But that if we follow the halacha carefully, and that becomes the ritzayna b'aray, kach lu ritzayna. So, because of that fear, and because of the lack of dignity of end of life situations. And because of the futility, so sometimes you have this culture, and you have to be a bit chazek and not cave into the hospital culture. You have to be able to see life and see your center of bore and push. Now, does that mean push like crazy? No, that doesn't mean that a person keeps on coding and coding and coding. You have to keep on running. And no, there is a gvul. Right, so there are a range of shitas in terms of how to respond in these cases. Your obligation, I think, is to engage the family, have the family make a decision, an appropriate decision. And it's a firm family, they make a decision with the rabbanim. If it's not a firm family, so then also they should go through a process, but it shouldn't be your. I don't think it should be your. I don't think it should be the medical establishment process. You know the four shitas, right? Rabbi Shechter is in one extreme. Rabbi Bleich, Rabbi Yoshev, Ben Achaim, the other extreme, and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, and Rabbi Zalman Nachem in between. So Rabbi Shechter has the approach that if it's a reasonable thing that this person wants to let go, then in many situations he will allow people to let go. And he says, in reasonable means, is it a normal thing? If a guy is depressed right now, he would not make this decision if he wasn't depressed, then that's not a reasonable decision. But if it's kind of, and that's where not hospital culture, but where the medical take on things is very, very important. Again, culture and the medical and doctors are not the same thing. But hospital culture sometimes is very, for example, whenever anybody asks me a question about a DNR, I ask, what's going to be if you sign a DNR? What's the hospital going to say? Is it going to become a DNT? See, before you ever answer a question about DNR, you have to know what's happening in the hospital. If every DNR becomes a DNT, then you can very rarely sign, right? But if it's a hospital which is sophisticated, and they know there's a DNR, DNI, and the two are not, the three are not the same necessarily, two, so then you have more flexibility. So that is, and one also has to keep in mind that you've seen many, many times where a person signs a DNR until it became Lamaisa. And then they say, that's not what I had in mind. You know, they signed the DNR 20 years before it came Lamaisa, and now it's Lamaisa, and now their grandchild's bar mitzvah is next Shabbos. They want to do everything they can, right? They want a different appreciation of chiyus when they get older. So that can often happen. And then on the other extreme, Rabbi Blachman and Yoshev, Yvon Mechem Mechem are very severe that it's very, very rare that you can take liberties not to treat. Rabbi Moshe writes, a person will be in a lot of pain. If a person's in a terminal situation, and it's in a situation that cannot be resolved, it's a machla that cannot be resolved, and it's terminal, and they're in a lot of pain. So then we can't deal with the pain. Rabbi Chaim says, but you can deal with the pain. You can give narcotics. So that's that. Those are two ends of this the spectrum. And as you know, in the Hasidic world, the Rabbi Blech's approach and Rabbi Yosha's approach is reigns supreme. And then we can attach many, many more names onto it. And then in the middle, Zalman Nechemiah has an approach I'm not that well acquainted with, and that is that if one's not going to bring about a refuah, so it's not mechuyev to try to bring a refuah. In other words, if we're not going to cure the person, the person has, let's say, terminal stage cancer or something, and there is no refuah for that person. And now they have, a pneumonia. So Shlomo Zalman would say you have to treat the pneumonia, because Shlomo Zalman's approach is that if a person's dying, you don't have to stop them from dying. But if this is not the machla that's going to kill them, you have to treat the machla. Zalman Nechemi, apparently, not that familiar with it, but really, I think, often follows this approach, that if you're not going to cure them, you'll cure the pneumonia. But they'll still have end-stage cancer, and they're still going to die in a short period of time. So it may not be obligated to cure the pneumonia. Lania's diet, I always try as hard as I can to follow Shlomo Zalman's approach. Because it's almost all centering around the Gemara of the Shulchan Aruch that you know. You know, if a person's dying, Shulchan Aruch says somebody's banging outside, and those bangs are keeping a person awake. The guy's dying, he's trying to die, and they won't let him die because somebody's hammering outside, and every time they hammer, bang, he wakes up. So the halach is that he can stop banging. How can he stop banging? This construction outside is keeping this guy alive. He's getting more mitzvahs because this guy's banging away. So how can Shulchan Aruch say that he can stop banging? So l'chora, all of them are saying is they all can be organized around this one remah. Reshechta says you can stop banging because anybody in the normal what's about them would say. That's what you want life to be. Every time you get so a normal person would say it's over. So then you can let go. And Rabbi Yoshev and Rabbi Blech would say that's a hasaras meneya. That is the guy is you're stopping a person who's from stopping him from keeping alive. That's a very unusual case. And Shlomo Zalman says that in that case you don't have to stop him from dying. He's dying, right? And the only thing that's keeping him and his breathing is going, whatever's going, and then this thing is stopping that process that you don't have to do. But if that person would have some other machla that you could resolve, so then you should resolve it. So when it comes to these situations, Lania's daiti, your obligation is not to overstep your bounds and to try to bring the conversation to a real conversation, hopefully with a Rav, if it's not a from person, with some kind of sophisticated social worker, to deal with it properly. If it's a non-from person, then they also should have an opportunity to deal with things before they go. Right? Vidui is a from take on things. But if it's not from, also they want to do a vidui. Also may have things to take care of. And we should give them an opportunity to take care of things. That's also an important thing to deal with. Not to depress somebody, but to indicate to them that they may want to speak to some people, maybe want to put things in order. And if one can provide that opportunity to somebody without depressing them, that's we should try to do that. So when it comes to dinar and dinais, I think your role is not to advocate, not to push by any means for care. You're in a position to that people should not succumb to a culture that is really not consistent with the way that we look at things. At the same time, often a rabbi needs really good information and a really good hashara of things, and a firm doctor who's going to call the shots the way they are, the way he sees them, can be of tremendous value to the rabbi, that he gets the real information, because often he gets information via somebody who's on the floor who's not so sensitive to it. So in his mind, you know, rabbi, why you? It's time already. So if you can get, if you can provide the context for a good conversation, that's very important. But I don't think the doctors should be in the situation where they are advocating DNRs and DNIs. And I think that I benefit tremendously if a doctor tells me, Rabbi, this is what I would do. It was his mother. That's great information. I don't need the shul to hear that. But for a rabbi to hear that, and the rabbi says, why? And have a real conversation. And then you can ferret out different things. And that sometimes we know decisions are made because the family is exhausted. The chayla can have more time, but the family is exhausted. So we have to try very hard that doesn't become a cheshbon. It's not easy. So that, and to call the shots, is this machala something that can be resolved? Have you ever seen it being resolved? Is it based on science? Is it anecdotal? So that really helps Rabbanim make good decisions. So, again, I don't want to end on the DNR. Talk about babies, you know, talk about happy things. So, I'll tell you, we'll end with the following. The idea that I came across a few weeks ago, and I discussed it last week in shul. The bottom line is that I'm happy to be here because your work is Avodas HaKodesh, and to come together to discuss how you're going to make sure that the nuances of the halacha of Pikuach Nefesh Dech HaShabbos, and you don't want to take liberties, and you're willing to make the sacrifices. That's the way I see it. You're making a sacrifice to be in the hospital on Shabbos, a sacrifice to have to make cheshbonos, to try to trade, to make sure that you're careful with the halacha. These are sacrifices that you and your families are making, and it's a sacrifice that sometimes, usually, Baruch Hashem, there's an end in sight by the time you start residency. So there's, you know, that's 3 years, 4 years fellowship, maybe a little bit more, but it's not easy with a young family. And you're doing it because it's Avodas HaKodesh. And nowadays, it's not so lucrative. So no one's here because you want to get rich. You're here because you want to take care of our Kodesh Baruch Hu's Brios and Klal Yisrael. So I came across last week Emor V'Yamarta. So Emor V'Yamarta is Hazir G'dolim Al Ktanim. So the question that many Sfarim have is, there's a mitzvah chinuch. Why did the Rabbeinu Shalom put one of the mitzvahs of chinuch in the parsha of Koyanim? Mitzvah chinuch, Koyanim is a small group. They're a subgroup. Right? So, mitzvah chinuch should be in Shabbos, Kashrus. Right? Davka to put the mitzvah chinuch, one of the sources, in Koyanim sounds counterintuitive. So, Shmuel Yaakov Weinberg was Rashiva Ner Yisrael. So he gave the following illustration. He said, there's a group of kids who are playing ball in the cul-de-sac. And at the end of the cul-de-sac is a base almond in a cemetery. And so often the ball goes in the cemetery and the kids run and get it. And there's one father is hanging out and he's watching the game and he sees the ball go into the cemetery. He's a Kohen. And his son is a Kohen. So he sees the ball go into the cemetery. He sees his son running after it. So he dives into the cul-de-sac and he stops his son. And his son says, what's the problem? He says, you can't run after the ball. It's going to the Beis HaChaim. He says, why not? The ball goes there all the time. Everybody goes to the Beis HaChaim. We go and we get the ball. And he says, but you can't do it. He says, not fair. Every kid goes in and gets the ball. Why can't I get it? He says, because you have to remember, you're a Kohen. So Rabbi Weinberg said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the mitzvah of chinuch in the parish of Kohenim, because every parent is mechanech their children, should be mechanech their children the way that a Kohen is mechanech their children. A Kohen reminds his children, you're a Kohen. And giving a child a sense of pride in who they are. So that Musar Haskel, that the way to be mechanech and the way to view things is the way Kohenim look at themselves. We're all part of the Melechus Kohenim. The same thing is true with all of you who are going into the Melechus HaKodesh of helping people of Refuah. You'll become, Bezer Hashem, greater and greater in the ability to take care of people. And you'll always see it as a shlichus that Baruch Hu gave you, and a great privilege. And when it's hard on the family, you have to remind yourself, you're kohenim, and you're missing your children, and your children will say it's not fair. My abba, my imma has to run away sometimes. You have to remind them that the melechus hakodesh of pikuach nefesh. Can't lose sight of that. And the fact that we are discussing Shabbos and Pikuach Nefesh, so that shows the preciousness of both Shabbos. We underestimate Shabbos. Because we know that Shabbos is not Nidches for many, many things of great, great value. But when Shabbos Nidches because of Pikuach Nefesh, so it shows us the great neches that Baruch Hu has given us both in Shabbos and in Pikuach Nefesh. So I'm just a spectator over here. But I'm happy to be of help. If I can be of help as you go further, it'd be a great kavod to be of help to you. So thank you very much.